The Brian D. O'Leary Show, your home for serious content amidst an unserious culture. Brian O'Leary back with you, The Brian D. O'Leary Show. Good to have you. Today, what I wanted to get into is an email I wrote. I got a little bit of response already back about it. And I think we'll just go into it. And a lot of you get the emails, go to briandoleary.com, O-L-E-A-R-Y, no apostrophe, Brian with an I, briandoleary.com. And straight to it, you go briandoleary.com/letter, and that's where you go for that. Anyway, today I wrote something. I'm just going to read it and maybe comment on it as I go through it, but seems to be the easiest way to do it. So I think the title was, I don't have it on me, but it says, surrounding yourself with better people. So here it goes. So first is a quote from Warren Buffett, CEO of Berkshire Hathaway. He says, it's better to hang out with people better than you. Pick out associates whose behavior is better than yours, and you'll drift in that direction. Here's my comments. Buffett's politics are loathsome, but for the most part, he has proved either wise or clever throughout his life. For who can quarrel with the notion that it is generally good to be around better people than yourself? However, what Buffett misses tends to be what is wrong with his politics. You shouldn't want to drift anywhere. Move instead with intention. And this is me off the cuff here. Intention is where we want to be. Drifting through life is nowhere to be. You hear about drifters all the time. We don't want to be drifters on the highway. Intent. Intention. So here we go. Consider, we are in a highly politicized environment. The once and likely future president was shot in the ear over the weekend. That was an escalation. Although perhaps contra Buffett's lesson, you shouldn't want to hang out with people who justify the events in Butler, Pennsylvania, in any way. In the first place, hanging out with anyone is a passive activity. Seek, on the other hand, active engagement with the skills, intellects, and good company of others. Furthermore, such people who are trying to put a nice spin on the fallout from the attempted assassination are not better than you. In fact, they are beneath you. Now, O'Leary's first law, which you can find on the Substack, man, just search for O'Leary's first law, but I will hopefully provide links to that here. But anyway, simply, I wrote about it, podcast about it over a year ago, perhaps. But O'Leary's first law states, nice is not a virtue. Sticking with politics, if you were to hang out and passively consume the coverage of last evening's Republican convention, you were not improved. If there was any drifting, it was probably in the wrong direction. To wit, there still appear to be many reasons to restrain from pulling that lever for Donald J. Trump come November. The nice pagan ceremony to end the RNC show was the cherry on top of that Sunday. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just search the Twitter, social media. It was bizarre and completely unnecessary. So, and that brings me actually to what I wanted to talk about and probably didn't have enough time for in this email or column, whatever, is to talk about Robert Conquest's Three Laws of Politics. And those who are, you know, in this sphere, this circle of mine, are relatively normal folks in a political sense, I would guess. But Robert Conquest's Three Laws of Politics, he was a political philosopher. This is brought to you by, I think, John Derbyshire. He heard Conquest talk about this, and he translated it into first law, second law, third law. Conquest says, first law, everyone is conservative about what he knows best. So you take your just run-of-the-mill leftist, very conservative about what he knows best insofar that he's not radical. Anyway, second law, any organization not explicitly and constitutionally right-wing will sooner or later become left-wing. And that is the story of the Republican Party in the United States. Never, indeed, was it a conservative party. Never really has been. There have been conservatives within and right-leaning folks within the Republican Party, but by no means is it a right-wing party. And it is drifting further and further to the left. The egalitarianism that we experienced last night with the aforementioned pagan ceremony to end the show is just but one. And the lack of character, lack of values, supposedly the Republican Party and the folks on the left, even ironically, didn't like that they were the party of family values. They didn't. Apparently don't like family values, but reality, not a family values party because of Conquest's second law, which he observed, that if it's not explicitly and constitutionally right-wing, it will sooner or later become left-wing. And we're seeing if it's not left-wing now, it's very drifting that way. Drifting, as Buffett said. So the third law of Conquest's three laws of politics is that the behavior of any bureaucratic organization can be best understood by assuming that it is controlled by a secret cabal of its enemies. Well, that's the United States. That is the Republican Party. That is any bureaucracy you get into that's been around for any amount of time, the enemies take control, and the enemies are generally of the left. The left plays to win. Folks on our side, we don't often play to win. We're nice about it. But as I said, nice is not a virtue. So where do we go with that? That's a big question. Where our temperament is such. The conservative temperament, if you start reading a bit more of Russell Kirk, conservative temperament is we don't need to quarrel with those people. We just essentially retreat into our own and our ideas, but that's not what is happening in the politics of this country or politics in general. Politics is about power. Ensure we can do the right thing or what we think is the right thing. But these other people want to kill you. And I will get to that as I continue with my email from today and why it caused a bit of controversy already, and perhaps maybe more, who knows? I'm not entirely clear. Controversy can be good sometimes. So say, getting back, sticking with politics, if you were to hang out and passively consume the coverage of last evening's Republican convention, you were not improved. If there was any drifting, it was probably in the wrong direction. To wit, there appear to be many reasons to restrain from pulling the lever for Donald Trump, as we said, the next pagan ceremony, to end the show, cherry on top of that Sunday. However, earlier in the day, the GOP accomplished its two most important tasks, which were officially nominating Trump and picking the vice presidential running mate. J.D. Vance was the best choice they could have made for vice president. Now, if a charlatan like Vivek, the fake Obamaswamy, or a swamp monster like Little Marco Rubio, if one of those guys were given the nod, Doug Burgum, creep from North Dakota, all these people on the short list that we saw, if you're watching any of the coverage. Well, many sane folks, like this correspondent here, would have stayed away from yet another election. And that's not good. Because the more people like me and people like you stay away from these elections, the left wins. The left keeps going. The long march through the institutions, as they like to say. Getting back to the column. Alas, Trump is not perfect, and Vance has some concerns, but they move us in the right direction. A positive drift, if you will. Again, we shouldn't drift through life, but incremental gains in politics are certainly better than the massive retreats brought on by the political left. Trump is an incremental gain over, say, a guy like Mitt Romney. J.D. Vance, certainly an incremental gain over, say, Mike Pence or the aforementioned swamp monsters and charlatans swimming around the Republican Party these days. Keep in mind that in the entirety of Western civilization, the political left has been the most violent and destructive force in its history, and it's not even close. So some questions remain. Who do you vote for, or who do you throw your support to? This correspondent remains perpetually on the fence about Trump. Yet the former president, who is by no means a man of the right, he's not the issue. What is at hand, however, is that those on the left, or those offering excuses for the political left, they are your enemies. There are feckless calls around social media for some sort of middle ground, and the self-righteous virtue signaling, caring not about whatever side a friend may be on, that reveals itself as pathetic groveling toward the people that hate you and want you dead. Those people are your enemies. It is personal. It is also political. And it has nothing to do with elections. And that's the end of the column. These people, like I said, they want you dead. They might not say it, but they want it. That's what they want. And for us to go around believing that everything's okay, and our friends and our families, they're just nice people. Well, nice is not a virtue. As previously stated, nice is not a virtue. It's my first law. I have two so far that I've developed. Second one is you can't cast yourself out of a tangle. That has to do with my days as a fly fishing guide, but it applies. So anyway, it's nothing new. Like, it's not, it's what I say is my first law, because it's not something that I came up with. I mean, nice is not a virtue, clearly. Kindness is. We've talked about it before on this show. But this whole thing, this politics, this Democrat-Republican thing, particularly for the presidential race this year, it's personal. It is personal. And people who think, for some reason, that Joe Biden will be an effective president, not only for the rest of this term that he's inhabiting right now, but for four more years, they're delusional and they're your enemy. He probably won't last if he does get somehow elected, or something happens with the election or with Trump or whatever it might be. Say Biden wins in November, whatever that means anymore, I'm not sure. But say he wins, he's got Kamala Harris waiting in the wings, and she's a horrible, atrocious, wretched human being. But she clicks some boxes for those folks on the left. I'd much rather have J.D. Vance in there as a president if something were to happen with Trump. You know, who knows? He could get shot again. They could hit him better. Who knows? He was inches away from having a Kennedy-like explosion in his head, perhaps. Maybe not that big, because the caliber wasn't as... Anyway, doesn't matter. Kamala Harris is a problem. Just even considering her as president of the United States is a problem. Joe Biden's terrible, no doubt about it. He's been in the system a lot for 50 plus years. He's an evil man. And he can't do it anymore. Couldn't do it in the first place, but he got in there. But he's a bad guy and a bad president. He's terrible. Continuing on the legacy of Obama, who, good grief, thought he's one of the worst presidents in history of the nation. But I would much rather have that guy back than Joseph Biden. it's remarkable how much better Obama was than Biden. And he was terrible. He was honestly terrible. Trump, in his first term, was not a great president. He had some good policies. A lot of policies I like. And I think going forward, he'll have even more policies that I like because I think he understands the political winds and where they're drifting, to use terminology from the column. And he has the ability, or the political capital at least, to install better people than he did before. Not particularly savvy with his appointments in that first administration. Actually, terrible. He listened to too many people that he shouldn't have. He fired a lot of people like he's proud of, with, especially if you ever watched The Apprentice. He's very proud of firing people that are incompetent. But he didn't do it enough, and he didn't have enough people willing to work for him. But now I think he has a lot more people willing to work for him and with him. Because there's this whole strain of Never Trump Republicans, which I never quite got. Because J.D. Vance, actually, I believe, was one of those types of folks, 2015, early 16, perhaps. Never vote Trump. But the people that are steadfastly Never Trump today, they're insane. Now, I know people that were Never Trump throughout Trump's first term because they never wanted Trump to be president at all. He's got a lot of problems, a lot of baggage, no doubt. I said, I'm perpetually on the fence about the guy. He killed my favorite sports league, the USFL, when I was a child. Although he did have my two favorite players, Herschel Walker and Doug Flutie, who were on the New Jersey Generals. Another story for another day. Where was I going with that? Yeah, Trump is, he's not great, but he's on our side. That's the reality. He's on the side of Americans. That's who we should be. Those are the sides. Americans and non-Americans. Why are we sending all this money and troops and overseas to the Ukraine? To Ukraine, whatever you want to call it. J.D. Vance says he doesn't care really about Ukraine. Well, he's one of us. He's one of us. Like, yeah, I care about the Ukrainian people, no doubt. I care about the Russian people, no doubt. I don't care about their governments. I don't want them to be killing. I think Trump said he's going to end the war when he gets in there again. That's good. Ending the war is fine. Having it continually go on is no good. But you have some of these dyed-in-the-wool neocons that were on the coverage yesterday when the Vance pick was announced, saying how terrible Vance is and how bad he is on foreign policy. Well, that's one of his shining parts of his whole philosophy, is the foreign policy. He's a isolationist is what they call him. We prefer to say non-interventionist, not isolated. We're part of the global world. Hey, I'm on a podcast that can be seen and is seen or heard throughout the entire globe. People talk to me from everywhere in the world. Emails that I send, briandeoleary.com. And these podcasts that we do, people hear from us all across the world. So we're not isolationists. We're not non-interventionist in our foreign policy. Just like all the great people before us. No, John Quincy Adams, we don't need to go abroad seeking monsters to destroy. 1824 or something like that. That was 200 years ago. And correct me if I'm wrong on that quote, but something like that, right around the same time. So it's nothing new. I mean, I think the founding of the United States as a polity, we were supposed to defend the country, not go out foreign wars at all. I read an interesting book or an interesting column last night long time ago, about 100 years ago, perhaps. Maybe I have to check it out. But it's from this book. I don't know if you can see me on video. It's called The Vintage Mencken, H.L. Mencken. He was reflecting, you know, do the math, probably, I think, 60 or 80 years after the fall of Appomattox, what it would have looked like had been flipped. Grant been on one side and Lee been on the other. You know, is so far who won? Who won the negotiation there at Appomattox Courthouse? It's an interesting discussion, but perhaps there would have been a marauding nation in the North going abroad seeking monsters to destroy. All the while, there might have been a more peaceful neighbor to the South. Yeah, they might have come together against the Spanish, say. Mencken says in 1898, the Spanish-American War, which I know, I think still blunder. But either way, maybe they would have come together for that. Maybe, you know, maybe the Northern polity would have gone to Europe, maybe gone to Europe a little earlier in World War I. Well, the Southern polity would have not gone or not sent its people, demanded that its people go, and they would have gone rich. But now, what would happen after the Civil War is that the war between the states is that the South, most of it anyway, changed and entirely of character. Most of its best people were wiped out or moved north for better economic opportunity because their land was destroyed and their culture was destroyed for the most part. And I'm not talking about chattel slavery at all, part of that culture. That would have, I believe Mencken says it in that essay, would have disappeared by the 1880s, and that's for all the only a decade more, perhaps, which is a decade too much, no doubt about it. But it wouldn't have been this. Well, and we're getting a bit far, getting a bit far afield here today with that. But pick that book up, The Vintage Mencken by Alistair Cook. The finest and fiercest essays of the great literary iconoclast. There was something else I probably wanted to mention about that in this book, but it's all great whenever you read Mencken. I don't agree with him on everything, no doubt about it, but he has a lot of good things to say, and he wrote a lot of words. And when we talk about greatness, he was a great, great writer. Yeah, like I said, whether you agree with him or not, I have the idea of greatness being able to consistently do things others cannot or will not do. It's not about being the smartest or the most talented. It's about being consistent. And I want to be great. I'm not that consistent right now with what I do. A lot of things, I have to come up with systems in order for that to take place. But getting back to Mencken, he was not necessarily the smartest. He analyzed things quite well, but maybe not the best. He did have great vocabulary, but that was about being consistent, learning new words every day, probably, I would imagine. I don't know what his practice was, but and then writing a lot, getting his stuff out on paper. We talk about a lot of times in some of the groups I'm in. And you should go to O'LearyInnerSphere.com if you want to sign up for one of our, for what I call our Inner Sphere. It's a series of online masterminds. We meet weekly. But what we talk about is being consistent in these groups. And a lot of people struggle, myself included. But we look to each other for to build accountability. And then in turn, create a sense of responsibility for ourselves. So it's not about necessarily being the most talented. A lot of us have talent. Some of us don't. there's some really bad people or poorly talented people that have become exceptionally great people just by their consistency and just doing it every day or every hour or whatever it might be in whatever their chosen field of endeavor. But I have a feeling that most of us out there are close to rank amateurs. That's a reality in whatever our chosen field of endeavor is. And that's because we don't put in the work. Jerry Seinfeld said that you got to learn to accept your mediocrity. No one's really that great. And he said, you know who's great? It's the people that just put in a tremendous amount of hours into it. It's a game of tonnage. Jerry Seinfeld, not the smartest, not the most talented, not the funniest, but every day, he's a testament to this. Every day, he writes at least one new joke. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it is. If you do it every day, he doesn't miss 2 days in a row. Sometimes one day, I think. Well, that's what I heard anyway. But never 2 days. And you got to think, like, guy's been doing it for close to 50 years. So anyway, like I said, go to briandealeary.com for all of what we're doing. But you might be interested in our Inner Sphere program. We have small groups, no more than 8 or 9 people, sometimes smaller than that, where we talk about, it's a mastermind type deal, but we get the right people around you. I curate these groups. Go to O'LearyInnerSphere.com for more there. And we'll have that in our show notes too. But I say that getting back to the column or the email that I wrote, we built something in the online world where you can indeed engage with people who are better than you. Kind of like Buffett says. Like Buffett says, I don't allow kinda in the Inner Sphere either. Or sorta. I don't allow that language. But we grow better. We grow and get better, not by drifting, but by attacking our problems with intention, relentlessly focused on solutions. And like I said, that's O'Leary's Inner Sphere, O'LearyInnerSphere.com. And I operate the sphere. Might not always be the case, but right now I do. And I say, I'm not nice. Because nice is not a virtue. So my members can vouch for that. And within these weekly meetings, or what we call juntas, a principle exists that there are to be no compliments. And people say, oh man, you're hardcore. I said, perhaps. But what we're doing, it's not therapy. It's not a social gathering of friends. We don't even make time to talk about politics or the government or life in general. But I am on your side. And I will be your friend and your teammate through all this. And I don't blow smoke where the sun don't shine. Folks are making great progress. And we're not just hanging out. And we're not drifting anywhere. So I appreciate your time, folks. Once again, everything we're doing over at briandealeary.com. And see you on the next one. Thank you. For more of our podcasts, head on over to briandealeary.com. And while you're over there, sign up for our email list. We'll send you daily emails. You can also find the link for our Substack page and various other resource pages we have. And that's at briandealeary.com. About starting that new podcast of yours, having trouble figuring out how to do it, perhaps? Never fear, we were in that same spot a few years back. At O'Leary & Company, we don't have all of it licked. But we've gone through the struggles of setting up those podcasts and those side gigs so that you don't have to. And you can go to O'LearyandCompany.com for more details. That's O'LearyandCompany.com.